Welcome to the Continuing Education Podcast for CASA Volunteers, connecting you with experts who can advance your advocacy for children and families. I'm your host, Maggie Halpin, and this is CASA On The Go.
Hi, y'all. Today, I am so excited for a discussion on a really critical topic that we don't emphasize enough in our pre-service training, which is advocacy around meeting the unique needs of children who are 0 to 5 years old. And we'll be talking about how to put the developmentally specific needs of these children at the forefront of our advocacy and really support their parents and families while working to permanently address the safety concerns that brought them into the system. So I'm really thrilled to have with me today several guests who have been part of leading a truly trailblazing program for advocacy for children 5 and younger and for their families. And they're going to be sharing some strategies around partnering with parents of young children, supporting positive and frequent parent-child visitation, and advocating for the developmental needs of children who are 0 to 5. So thank you so much to the amazing Crystal Van and Carolyn Thiesing of Child Advocates of Fort Bend for bringing their expertise to this conversation. And thank you to my wonderful colleague, Anna McDonald of Texas CASA, who's been partnering with the folks at Fort Bend to create some forthcoming resources around this advocacy area. And we'll talk a little bit more about those resources later on in this episode. So Crystal and Carolyn, thank you so much for being here. Would you introduce yourselves and share a little bit about your background and why you're so passionate about this work?
Sure. I'm Carolyn Thiesing. Currently, I am the Court Advocacy Manager and the Infant Toddler Team Lead. I've been with Child Advocates since 2009. And prior to that, I was with CPS as a conservatorship worker. I did that for about 10 years.
Wow.
So since we're since graduating from college many years ago, I've worked to heal the pain of domestic violence and child abuse. Children, I guess, ages 0 to 5 have been a passion of mine because of their vulnerability and their inability to express their needs and desires. And as an advocate, I can do that.
Wow, that is incredible to hear how long you have been working in this movement for the healing, supporting the healing of families. I'm humbled to get to be in conversation with you, Carolyn. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, y'all. I'm Crystal Van. I'm the Program Innovation Manager at Child Advocates of Fort Bend. I've been a part of this agency since 2011. Funny story, Carol is actually my CASA supervisor. She welcomed me into this world. And then I came on staff in 2013 because, you know, I just loved the work that I was doing and wanted to do it full time. Prior to that, I was a teacher. I taught 5th grade and I worked with kids as well in pre-K and kindergarten. And I also got my degree in human development and family studies. So children and families has kind of always been on my radar. It's always been something I've felt really passionately about, and I've always wanted to be an advocate. So I even applied when I was 18 and then realized you have to be 21. So, but I came back and here I am.
Wow. Crystal, so amazing to hear. You also have been in this work for more than a decade and working with kids and their families even before that from an education perspective. So excited to get to talk about this with y'all. Let's dive in by talking about the big picture of how this really amazing advocacy program for infants and toddlers and their families came into being. And then we can move into talking about, you know, some takeaways and best practices that advocates around the state can learn from the work y'all have been doing and bring it to their own work with children and families. So could you talk about how this infant and toddler advocacy project started?
I can. And so it started back in 2005. Our district court judge, Ron Pope, at that time was approached by a program out of Washington, D.C. called 0 to 3. And they asked Fort Bend County to be a pilot program. So the judge brought together a collaborative of CASA, CPS, attorneys, and Dr. Connie Almeida as the project liaison. And we did a lot of training to look at a new way to support families and children, especially babies. And it was at the beginning, it was a little bit of a buy-in. It was a new approach, but with the tools that the 0-3 program gave us, we were able to develop what we call the Safe Babies Court, or what 0-3 now calls the Safe Babies Court. So what was different about the court was that we had monthly court hearings. And we felt by meeting monthly, we were able to make the parents more accountable of the services they were doing. We were able to discuss if they had transportation issues or if the babies had any special needs. And we were able to address those immediately and not just 3 months down the road at a statutory hearing. A lot of the children's medical and developmental needs, which changed so rapidly, were discussed at each court hearing. So we knew if the child had developmental needs or how we were addressing them. So a lot of it was trying to address the problems that the families may be having at almost immediately by meeting monthly. Visitations were discussed, and the testifying of our court advocates was a big part of these informational hearings. The judge wanted to hear what the observations were and how the parents and the families and the children were doing during these visits. So we became a key aspect to what our volunteers were observing and making the visits better.
Awesome. Wow. It's so cool to hear about that model and moving from, this kind of more slow pace, drawn out, like every 3 months approach to court hearings, and saying like, we want to move as quickly as possible to make sure these needs are getting met. That's really cool. Crystal, anything you wanted to add?
Yeah. So I think that a big part of advocating for this age group is really honing in on the CFE process. So we initiate that process very early on. So initially when we started the program, CFE wasn't a part of our lives, but it was a practice that we were already doing. And so we were working with the families and the partners, but I think that there is a distinction in the way we advocate initially on our cases 10 years ago is different than where we are now. The people sitting at that table in that collaboration piece, it was almost like there's parents and then there's partners, right? And it's kind of a you versus us. And I think that dynamic has shifted and changed. And through our infant and toddler court, through the 0-3 program, we helped that shift in thinking that the collaboration isn't just on the perspective of partners working with parents. It's we are all a collaboration, right? And these parents are really the expert in their child's life. Yes, they have absolutely made mistakes, but they're not defined by their mistakes, and they still have a lot to bring to the table. And that voice is incredibly important because these kids are so little, they don't have their own voice to lift. We as providers, as people working with the family, are helping the parents to lift their child's voice in addition to us as the advocates working with these kids lifting the children's voices. And so by giving our court system, our partners, our team, the opportunity to meet with each other on a monthly basis, we were able to make sure we were hearing all the voices at the table. We were making sure that what was needing to be said about whether the child was meeting developmental milestones or the parents needed some support on resources, that was being brought up very quickly and could be addressed rather than waiting until 3 months into a next court hearing. So it was just absolutely crucial to have that collaboration with the parents and the partners and the frequency of contact with all of each other to work to kind of cultivate the team and then create that support network that we were looking for to help advocate for the kids and the parents.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, absolutely recognizing the expertise that parents have when it comes to, you know, what needs to happen to like move this family forward and like, what does their child need? And then really committing to that, like to that level of communication. I think communication in my experience working with families years ago, that was often like one of the most frustrating pieces, was feeling like, well, I haven't heard back, or I'm on a wait list, or, you know, these things, things not being able to move at the pace that parents were, you know, wanting so that they could be reunified with their children. So it's so cool to hear how that has kind of been really like moved to the forefront in the like model that y'all have developed. So the goal of this advocacy program is to better meet the needs of young children 0 to 5 and better meet the needs of their parents and family. So as CASAs, we're appointed to advocate for the best interests of children, you know, or the child that's on the case. And sometimes in pre-service training, when I used to train advocates, I would hear people kind of like asking like, if I'm appointed to the child, you know, why am I advocating for the parents' needs to be met? So could y'all talk a little bit about just making that connection, like why it's so crucial that we are committed to advocating for the parents' needs to be met, how that is connected to the best interests of the child?
I think in pre-service, we talk about if we can't address the needs of the parents, how can we heal them in order to be better parents for their own children? Mm-hmm. And our goal is always family reunification first. And how can we achieve that if we don't work with the entire family to heal them? And I think that's been a great change in our focus. Back when I was a CPS worker, that was not the focus, was the whole family. Mm-hmm. And I think this change in helping the parents understand where they're at and the issues that they may be carrying, to be able to release those through therapy or whatever services they need, and then moving on to be a better parent for their children. I think that's been a change.
Yeah, it's definitely a shift in perspective for sure. I think when I initially took my first CASA case, it was a little bit more controversial and kind of, you know, you've made these mistakes and you need to fix these mistakes. But the reality is, again, they're not defined by their mistakes. I understand that's why we're involved, but they're still a person that has gone through their own experiences and different levels of trauma, which we can kind of talk about more how we've integrated that into our practices later. But they have done something right. Okay. And we have to focus on what they have done right and their positives, and then help them hone in on the negatives that they have, that we can help support as CASAs and as partners, because again, this is a partnership that is way more than just us. And so when we're talking about being appointed for this child or for these kids, like, we're just one small piece of this big puzzle, and the parents are a big part of this puzzle. And so we have to empower them so that they understand, yes, you've gone through a lot of different negative experiences. You've come from hardship yourself. This is probably a cycle. I don't know how many cases I've worked on where it wasn't a cycle of abuse or neglect or some kind of traumatic experiences. Not to say that all parents are traumatized, but to say that we all have a history. But again, you're not defined by that. And so how can we help support you, whether it's through community resources, mental health support? These services aren't just a list to check off. And as in the past, I think, unfortunately, it might have been in a way where we viewed it like that, that this needs to be done, this needs to be done, this needs to be done, and then we report it to the court. But there's so much more to it, because if you're properly healing from those things as a parent, it's a lot different than just a checklist. You know, like, how are you feeling after therapy? Like, you know, not just did you do it, how are you feeling? Do you feel like you're better equipped to manage a situation where your child is upset? And not only that, but your own stress and your own things that you need to cope with. And so it's a lot more than that. There's that trauma aspect of it, but so much training goes into this. And so we really had to do a lot to help shift that thinking and that mentality with not just volunteers, because Carol already touched on it. We have such an intensive pre-service training for our volunteers and continuing education trainings on how to work with our parents, whether it's through trauma-informed practices or how to just be supportive. Even just in someone that's pointing them in the right direction for, oh, you could probably contact your attorney for this. Hopefully they know that, but those reminders, those gentle reminders need to be there as well. And then our partners, of course, and then bringing in resources from the community and saying, hey, by the way, volunteers, partners, parents, these resources are available to empower you because you, again, are so crucial in this process. And not just you, who you bring to the table with you. Because when we're convening at that table, we want our parents to have people there supporting them as well. And so just being an advocate for that is absolutely crucial. Because I've heard a lot of parents say, I don't have anyone, but everyone has somebody. And we just have to use the right tools to find that information, whether it's a genogram or a connections, a circle of trust, whatever it is, there's a tool, there's a way, there's a resource. We just have to find it as a community, as CASAs.
Yeah, so many great points that I appreciate that you brought up, Crystal, and just that last point about, like, you know, not just like honoring how crucial it is that we're working with the parent and supporting them in their process, but that we're, you know, actively welcoming their support system into the process. And I, you know, yeah, like that wasn't the case when, you know, many years ago when I was in meetings with parents, a lot of times they were on their own or maybe had one person there with them. And like it breaks my heart to think back at those conversations now and how much better we could have done and should have been doing. And so just to hear that, like, yes, we need like the parent and their support system to be outnumbering the professionals in the room. And that's really important for the dynamic. And I think that's just huge.
Absolutely. Because we're going to go away and they need someone to be there. Everyone needs somebody. So
yeah. So one of the big pillars of this approach to advocacy for infants and toddlers is around really proactively supporting positive parent-child visitation. And I'm so excited to talk to y'all about that because visitation's so huge and it's not something that I got a lot of training around. How can I like support, you know, the family and making the best of that? So can y'all share some best practices for folks who are appointed to young children around how they can help facilitate positive visitation and really use a strengths-based lens when they're observing visitation?
So it all begins in pre-service training. We start the first conversations about positive visitations, and we do, in our trainings, we'll hand out a picture. And the picture may be a family and child that's just full of chaos and negativity. And I ask the volunteers in this training course to take a look at this picture and tell me what you see. Of course, the first things that come out of their mouths are all the negative, because it's easy to see the negative. And when you ask them to look deeper into the positive, then all of a sudden it's, oh, there is food, or, oh, you know, there's dad coming home from work. And so all of a sudden they're able to look past the chaos to find the positive. So that starts in training. And I'll tell the story about a parent who brought to a visit, which I was at, a whole fish. She opened up her cooler and there she put this 18-month in a high chair and put a whole fish on the tray. And of course you gasp. It was like, okay, how is this toddler supposed to eat this whole fish? And I told the story to the training class. And I said, tell me what positive you're hearing from a whole fish on a toddler's tray. It was, oh my God. I mean, that they talked about bones and they talked about all these things. And all of a sudden somebody said, but they brought food. So that's the whole concept, is bring out the positive in all our visitations when you're with these families. And it's there. You just have to look for it and understand that they're there. They're at the visit. That's positive step number one.
Yeah.
So part of our volunteers is, how do we make these visitations better for our families? And so we started with a visitation bag. And because our CPS office at the time really didn't have the tools and the toys and the different items needed for a good visit, so our volunteers were able to make up their own visitation bag with items that were age appropriate to the child they were observing in their CASA child. So there would be a blanket, there may be massage lotion, there may be diapers, wipes, toys, books, anything that would fit for a good visitation. And they would bring this bag to their visits, and the parents would get used to knowing that the CASA was coming with items for them to play with their child. So we started doing that visitation bag. We encourage parents to read to their children. And I had a dad that told me, I can't read. I don't know how to read. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, that's fine. You just open up the book, look at the pictures, and you're connecting with your child by telling your story. The man cried. He never thought he would be able to read a story to his child because he didn't know how to read. So it's those small little things that you do that connects parents to their children. So that visitation bag was huge item for our volunteers to bring. We also encourage parents. I mean, they may have lost their child or removed their child removed early on, but I know that there's parents that have blankets at home. They were preparing for the birth of their child. They might have a diaper bag. So we encourage them to bring things that from home that they may have. And I had a young mother who was so excited when I told her that to bring her own diaper bag if she had it in blankets. The next visit, she came with her big diaper bag. Someone had monogrammed it for her. She was so proud of all the things that were in it. And I can remember these little work boots that came out of the diaper bag because it was something that she had bought for her child that she thought she was never going to be able to share with her child. So those little encouragement and those little things that you do, you have no idea what impact you're making with the parent and their child, that connection that they so long for. They did carry these children. They did have these children, and they're missing those important aspects. There's so many things I can go into. We have a visitation timeline. I tell a story of a 2-hour visit and a mom telling me, I can't do this for 2 hours. It's too long. I don't know what to do with my child. I'm sitting in a room at the CPS office. So we derived a visitation timeline, and we broke down the 2-hour visit in 20-minute increments of things for her to do, welcoming her child, playtime, massage time, because they don't get to give their child a bath. So we use massage as that connection, that eye contact, that feeling, touch, smell, feeding time, diaper change, and then the cuddle, reading, rocking time. And before you know it, it's the time to prepare to go home. And with timeline, she was able to go back to saying, I can do 2-hour visits. There's things for me to do. I didn't know what to do. So I remember saying, no, you cannot give up your 2-hour visit. We'll help you, you know, figure out what to do during that time. Our volunteers learn to, as I call it, gentle guide. If you see something that the parent's not doing correctly, you guide them to the right way, and then you step back. It's a gentle way of teaching, but without it being negative. You know, you want the whole experience to be positive. I mean, we all did not come with guidebooks on how to be the best parent, and if they don't have someone teaching them or guiding them, then how are they going to learn? So our volunteers have stepped into that role. And the idea of modeling and stepping away is just an encouragement that you can do this visit just as well as anybody else. It's the time that you're spending with your child that counts. I can go on. I mean, I can go on and on. I mean, developmental milestones is a huge one. I have volunteers who bring the papers with them to the visits each month and discuss what milestones their baby should be at. And a lot of our moms had no idea what a developmental milestone was. And I have one volunteer who said the mom was so excited at the 3-month mark, my child is doing, you know, the rolling over or grabbing Cheerios or whatever. I mean, it was a big deal for her to actually be a part of her child's milestones.
Yeah.
So it's just finding and listening and gathering information during these visits. A lot of our parents don't want to give up the relatives they may have, but if you listen, you're going to hear of an Aunt Jane that has always been helpful, or, you know, there's a grandmother out there. So, we kind of tell them part of that collaborative family engagement is to listen during these visits. You learn a lot about who the family members are and who they really are attached to, but afraid to tell them they're in this situation.
Yeah.
I'd love to add to that if possible, Margaret.
Yeah. Carol,
does
you
such
so
a great
much.
Job.
Yeah, she, that was like, I feel like I need to be taking notes.
I am.
Yeah, there's so much more.
We do this.
No, Carol is so good. Every time she was saying something that I was like, oh yeah, this reminds me of this one thing. And so I just like had a couple things that I wanted to also share. Because Carol introduced me to the visitation bag, which is pretty great when you think about it. Because a visit is so awkward, right? This kid is removed from their home with their parents, who is their expert, that they're very bonded to. Even if there's abuse or neglect, they still want to go home. I haven't met any kids that, in very rare cases, don't want to go home, and it usually shifts back that direction at some point as they start to heal. And that's just the nature of connection. This is, we're all connected to each other and attached. And so when they get removed from their home and they're in these visitations, I can't even imagine being a parent sitting in a room. I remember as a CASA volunteer how awkward it was to sit in a room and be like, okay, do things. And make them good things so that we can then write and then report it to a judge. And so even before that happens, we have to remember that we as CASA volunteers need to focus on that connection with the parents as well. Those parents need connection so that they can experience a trust in you and in the partners working with them and in our system, essentially, because this is a system, to make sure that they're being encouraged to do what they need to do to get their child back. Because that's the goal, ultimately. And again, early on, reunification is the goal in all of our cases. And with the infants and children, that's usually a bigger chance than if we start talking about realistically in the older years with our kids. And so, again, that component of working with the family is so crucial because that's where we're heading. Building that trust is important. And so that when we get into these parent-child visitations, we as the volunteers, as the CASAs, have an opportunity now to say, hey, we know you've developed that connection with us and you have some sense of trust. If you need help, let us know. And that's what Carol's talking about. That mother said, hey, I don't know what to do in 2 hours. And Carol said, well, we'll fix that. Here you go. Here's what you can do. Now you can sit and you can read a book with your child. You can connect with them. You can bond with them. We can teach you how you were never treated potentially as a child. The things that you missed out on, we can show you that. And again, this is not our job as CASAs because it is completely up to the parent to express to us whether they need the help or not and how much they need. We can gently encourage, but they have to be open to receiving it. And it's also not our job to correct if they're doing wrong as the CASAs, because obviously we're not supervising the visits. There's caseworkers present. So this is all in conjunction with, again, that collaborative network of people working around the parents, around the family, to all in the end support the kids. And so I like to always just note that the caseworker is still very much a big part of, like, you're in charge of this visit and we're just a passive participant supporting the parent, and that we have done all of this with the parent's permission and hopefully with a connection to that parent and to that child. And then we're all in this room, maybe laying on the floor on a blanket that the parent has brought out from the visitation bag that Carol has designed. And then the volunteer has said, oh, I know this child loves balls, sensory balls. And the parent's lying on the floor and the CASA's over in the back, either passively watching or maybe even lying on the floor with the parent and all laughing and eating snacks. And it can be an incredible experience. It doesn't have to be a us against you negative situation. That's what we're trying to train from that pre-service training. That's what we're trying to talk about, is to always focus on this is an opportunity that we have to create a positive and supportive environment for parents. And not just in those visitations, but in the meetings, because I know I have been to meetings where people start talking about one thing negative and it's very quickly a domino effect. And then unfortunately you're in a mediation or a permanency conference or some family meeting, and they're talking about all the bad things that have happened. we've even opened and talked. A lot of times we have to talk about why we're involved, because that's why we're involved. This is the abuse and neglect that occurred. Now, I went to a meeting 10 years ago, and that's what we would do. And we get stuck a little bit on that negative piece, because then it's like, oh, it's contentious, you against us. I went to a meeting 2 weeks ago, and they said, all right, what has this parent done well? And they weren't talking about the parent talking about themselves. They wanted to know from the partners. And as the CASA in that meeting, I said, she raised 7 children, and they all are kind. They have nicknames for each other. They're caring. They ask about each other. They all say please and thank you. And that's, maybe those aren't big things, but to me, that is huge, because that shows that she cares and that she loves them and that she's taught them to love one another. And that parent was, by the way, in jail, and she made sure to get to that meeting. That's another positive. So let's just focus on the positives to proactively support this parent-child connection in every aspect of the case, in court, in visits, in meetings, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Oh, so critical. I'm so glad that you shared that story and just made those points, Crystal, about really grounding our advocacy in authentic compassion and care, and focusing on like what's going well and how can we build on that. This has, Carol, do you want to hop in?
I was going to, you know, we talked about the visits all being at the CPS office. I just wanted to add that if you're observing a visit in a relative's home, grandmother's home, kinship home, that we also want the parents to be relaxed in that situation. And I had a grandmother once say, I leave the laundry for my daughter to do because I've got her baby. And so, you know, I leave the basket of baby clothes. I want that normalcy to be in place. So this mom would do the laundry. She would wash bottles. She'd do bath time, feeding time, play time. So all those same things that you're doing at a CPS visit, you have the ability to do it at a relative's home where your child may be placed, but you're even enhanced because you can actually do as if you were home with your own child. And we encourage that because we don't want the grandparents or the kinship or whoever's what to feel like they're, you know, the responsible party. We want to make sure that the parents, the mother, the father are empowered to the role of the parent and that they do exactly what they would be doing in their own home. Even though it's not fun to do laundry or wash dishes or bottles or anything, but this is what you would be doing if you were caring for the child in your own home. And when we see that being done, we cheerlead and encourage them to continue to do that, because when the child is reunified, that's what you will be doing at home. Yeah. So, you know, I just wanted to talk about home visitations are wonderful. And we, you know, we encourage all our babies and our little ones to be with family, just so that the mom and the dad can have this experience.
Yeah, that is a great point, Carol. And yeah, absolutely, that CASA should be advocating with urgency to make sure that kids are placed with their family whenever possible. Right. And that's a huge role that we can play in helping to bring those people in and look for those opportunities if that's not already the case. And yeah, just the awkwardness, like you said, Crystal, and also just the power dynamic that is real when we are, you know, a court appointed figure walking alongside this family, and these parents are aware that we're, you know, observing like how they're parenting, and that information is going to be reported back to the judge. And so everything that we can be doing to build, you know, authentic working relationships with these families, with these parents, to show that we're invested in supporting them in healing, that we're invested in their family, that we're invested in their child's well-being and see their critical role in that is so important. This conversation is so wonderful, y'all. We're going to pause and wrap up this episode, and we're going to come back. We have even more to talk about and more strategies to share from the amazing work that the folks at Child Advocates of Fort Bend have been doing. So please tune back in for part 2 of this conversation.
Thanks for listening to CASA On The Go. Join us next time for more dynamic continuing education brought to you by Texas CASA.